السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وبعد. So any questions from the quiz? No? Okay. Alright, so we covered quite a few topics last week. We covered the, well, actually, this is what we're going to cover this week. So we covered we covered traveling, we covered different types of prayers and all of that. So now we're going to move on, and we're actually going to be going until the end of this book. So we're going to be finishing the Guide of the Believer book, and then we're going to be moving on to a different topic, inshallah ta'ala, Allah willing. So the extra prayers, which we didn't start, we have to realize that we talked about the five daily prayers. And we talked about the Friday prayer as well. But the Friday prayer substitutes for the, which prayer? For the Zohar prayer, right? So it's considered, either it's going to be an obligatory prayer for the males, for the females they have to pray Zohar anyway. So it's still considered in the realm of necessary, mandatory, obligatory prayers. But then there are extra prayers in Islam. And that is that besides these five prayers, there are other ones which are recommended that Muslims should pray whenever they have an opportunity to do so. Now, they're classified in different things. Some of them are considered highly recommended, and you should try to pray them all the time. And other ones are considered to be just recommended or encouraged. Whenever you get the opportunity, you know, you can go ahead, you have the time, you feel like you need to perform it, you go ahead and you perform it. So we'll start with one of the most important prayers. And that is known as the Witr prayer. Witr literally means odd, right? Meaning like the odd number instead of the even. So it's going to be performed in an odd number of units. So you notice that most prayers throughout the day, the Fajr prayer, is odd or even. Even has two units. Zohar prayer, even. Asr prayer, even. Aisha prayer, even. Except Maghrib, most of the prayers are even. So this is, Witr prayer is known as the an odd prayer because it has an odd number of units in it, kind of like the Maghrib prayer. And actually one of the ways to pray it is very similar to the Maghrib prayer. So this is one of the most emphasized prayers that you find in Islam after the five daily prayers. So it's something that we should really make a habit. If you want to start doing extra good deeds, you want to start doing other things, you should first make sure your Witr prayer is down because this is a top priority for you in your life. Right, so you can pray Witr prayer any time after you pray your Isha prayer. So the timing for the Witr prayer is after Isha. But it's not after the timing for Isha. It's in the time frame of Isha, but after you've prayed your Isha prayer. Right, so any time you prayed after your Isha prayer, but before the time for Fajr enters. So any time in the time span of Isha prayer, which is what, by the way, what is the time span for Isha prayer? It begins when? No, not an hour and a half after Maghrib. Every time zone differs. So we said, how do you specifically know that the time for Isha has come in? When the dark starts, but that's not clear enough. More clear. When the white, not white, light, yeah, the brightness, the white brightness in the sky has disappeared. The glow, the white glow in the sky has disappeared and the night comes in. So meaning it, night comes, but what defines night? It means that white glow is gone in the sky. Right, so that's the definition of when Isha starts. And when does Isha end? Right, but what is Fajr? The white line? Right, what's that called? In English? Not sunrise. It's easy to confuse it with sunrise. It's dawn, right? So the Witr prayer time begins when the white glow in the sky goes away, and it ends when when the dawn comes. So you can pray any time between then, but the one condition is you have to pray Isha first. You have to pray your Isha first. Okay, so you can do it any time after you pray your Isha prayer. Now it's recommended to delay your Witr prayer until the last one third of the night. That's what's considered to be recommended. So what is the last one third of the night? Well, if you consider what night is, you consider sunset, and you consider dawn, right? Or, yeah, dawn pretty much. And you take that time and you divide it into three portions. Let's say 3 hours each, for example, depending on the season. The last third of it, which is about 2-3 hours before Fajr prayer, before dawn, that's considered the recommended time to pray Witr. Now, that's only if you're used to waking up early, right? If you're in the habit that you know you're going to wake up. But a lot of people, they try and they say, okay, I'm going to try and pray in the recommended time. I'm going to wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. But you don't end up waking up. You miss it quite often. So if that's the case, it's better to simply pray the witr prayer before you go to bed at night, because you're allowed to pray at that time as well. So you can pray before you go to sleep at night so that you're not going to miss this prayer. Now, there are several ways to actually pray the witr prayer. And one way to perform it, which is a very easy way to learn it, it's very similar to the Maghrib prayer. So the Maghrib prayer, you know, is 3 units, right? With in almost the same way, same shape, same form as praying the Maghrib prayer. So what you do is, in the first unit, you're going to recite Al-Fatiha. And then what do you normally do in the first unit of Maghrib prayer after you recite Fatiha? More verses of Quran. You can recite whatever you want. So in the witr prayer, it's recommended to recite Surah Al-A'la, if you know it. Otherwise, you could recite anything. It's just recommended. It's not a requirement. So you could go ahead and recite whatever else you want to do. In the second unit, when you stand up, you're going to recite Fatiha. You can recite any other surah, but it's recommended to recite Al-Kafirun in the second unit, which is one of the shorter ones. So it's pretty easy to memorize. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الْكَافِرُونَ. And then what you do is after you recite Quran, after you're done in the second unit, you sit like normal. You stand up for the third unit after you're sitting and everything. And in the third unit, after you finish reciting your surah Al-Fatiha, you recite Al-Ikhlas. So Al-Ikhlas is قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدْ, that surah. Once you're done with that surah, normally, now see, here's one difference. Normally in Maghrib prayer, in the third unit, you're not going to recite any more Quran after Fatiha, right? But in the witr prayer you do, you recite another surah even in the third unit. And after you're done with that, or you could recite whatever other surah. When you're done, you raise your hands, you say takbir, and you say Allahu Akbar. So you raise your hands again in the middle of the prayer in the third unit. And then you put your hands back, you know, to your torso like normal. And then what you're going to say is, you're going to recite this supplication known as the Qunut supplication. And the Arabic is here. Allahumma hdini fi man hadayt wa afini fi man afayt. It's there for you. And this is the translation of it. So, O Allah, guide me like those you have guided. Protect me like those you have protected. Guard me like those whom you have guarded. Bless me in what you have given me. And save me from the evil which you have decreed. You decree and nothing can be decreed against you. Whomever you support can never be disgraced. You are blessed, Lord, and high above all. So this is one of these supplications that's there. There's more than one supplication that you can read in the witr prayer. Right? But as long as it's been narrated from the Prophet. Right? So there's more than one. I chose this one because it's pretty short and it's a little bit more intimate speech. So both, you know, all of them are correct. There's actually another main one which is very common. You could choose either one. They're both fine. If you don't know the supplication, what do you do? You can simply say Subhanallah 3 times, like you would do if you didn't know any other part of the Quran, or you can maybe recite a little bit more Quran or something like that. So you could substitute something until you learn this. But the thing is, we shouldn't be lazy in learning this. Right, so we should at least try to learn one of these supplications at least within 3 months or within 6 months or something like that. So we shouldn't be lazy. I'll tell you from personally, you know, when I first learned how to pray witr and I learned that you have to memorize this, but then you have the option of saying, you know, Subhanallah or something like that, or you can recite, you know, Ayatul Kursi or something. I just kept on delaying for a few years. There's really no excuse to delay for that many years. It doesn't take that long to memorize. So you should just make a plan. You know, I'm going to sit down. I have like a few hours, maybe 1 hour. 1 hour, 3 days, sometime in my life within this year. I'm going to sit down. You memorize it in an hour. Again, the next day, you spend another hour just reviewing it. The next day, you spend another hour reviewing it, and you have it down. And you recite it every day in witr anyway. So you keep on practicing it. So just don't delay too much, right? You have a few months. You don't have to learn it tomorrow, but don't delay too much. Take a few months and make sure you get it down. So once you're done saying this supplication here, you complete the third unit as normal. So what would you do after you do this? If you were in Maghrib prayer, what would you do next? You go into bowing, you go into ruku, say Allahu Akbar, and you complete the prayer like normal. And that's it, it's finished. So now, that's how you pray the witr prayer. So the only difference is that we saw, it's exactly like Maghrib prayer. With one, what's the first exception? You recite a surah after Fatiha in the third unit. Right? What's the second exception? You say takbir. Right? You say Allahu Akbar. And the third exception is the dua. You make this qunut dua. The supplication that's here. Okay? So once you're done, if you finish your prayer, if you forget to perform your qunut supplication, which is very common for a lot of people, because they think almost like they're praying maghrib, and then they go Allahu Akbar, and they go into bowing, and they continue their prayer, and then they realize, oh, you know what, this was witr prayer. I was supposed to add that other thing in. What do you do? It's considered to be a correctable mistake. And a correctable mistake can be compensated by doing what? Two prostrations, and that's it. All right, so you just do that, and you finish. You don't have to go back. You don't have to do any other qunut or anything. It's also recommended. This is a very highly recommended prayer. So if someone misses the witr prayer, it's actually recommended for them to make up that prayer as well. Okay, to make it up. Witr is such an important prayer. Did I write that twice? I wrote it twice. All right. If you're making up the witr prayer before sunrise, meaning during the fajr time, right, or any time before sunrise, you're gonna pray it like normal. But if you make it up after sunrise, what you're gonna do is you're gonna make it up as four units instead of three units. And the reason for that is the witr prayer is supposed to be during the nighttime. So if you delay until the daytime, what you're doing is you're gonna actually be making it up as four units. Okay, so this is the opinion according to several scholars. So even number of units is gonna be preferred. That's it for witr prayer. So moving on. There's other prayers that are connected to the five prayers. You know, most people when they pray, they're going to fall short in their prayers. They're going to not be they're not going to be concentrating, they're not going to be giving their full attention, their full time and everything. So one of the ways to compensate for that lack of perfection in those prayers and those shortcomings is to perform these additional prayers which are connected to the five daily prayers. And these are really recommended. When you perform the five daily prayers, it's recommended to also pray the following prayers along with them. These are the ones which are considered highly recommended. Okay, so the highly recommended ones are two units before Fajr. So praying a two-unit prayer before you pray your Fajr prayer. So Fajr is two units itself, and it's highly recommended to pray two units before you pray the Fajr prayer as well. And these two units are supposed to be brief, very short units. You're supposed to recite very short surahs of the Quran. So they're not supposed to be long. In fact, they're supposed to be very, very short. And this is one of the, out of the highly recommended prayers, this is one of the most highly recommended ones. So after witr prayer, this is the most highly recommended prayer. So you should really make it a habit to not miss this at all. And the great thing about it is, it happens to be one of the shortest prayers, because you're supposed to pray it short actually. You're not even supposed to go long. Just really two very short units of prayer, meaning you recite very little Quran in the units. If, in fact, this prayer is so recommended that if you miss your Fajr prayer and you're making up your Fajr prayer later on, it's actually recommended that you make up these two units as well. It's not required, but it's recommended that you make them up. If you join a group prayer. Let's say you're coming to the masjid and you see people praying, but you came late. If you finish your Fajr prayer, or let's say everyone started the Fajr prayer, you go ahead and you join them, you can actually do these two units after Fajr prayer, immediately, after you're done praying the Fajr prayer, because it's highly, highly recommended. So you're allowed to do that as well. Although normally you should keep it in the order. So you should be praying before. But in case you don't, you could actually pray it immediately afterwards. So that's the most recommended prayer. So Fajr, that's one thing. If you're not doing it right now, you should start doing the witr prayer, and you should start doing the, that's like step one in your advancement. If you're not doing witr, you should start doing witr. Make it a habit. Then your next level, when you're ready to move forward, you make sure to do the two units of Fajr prayer before that prayer. So that's very, very recommended as well. All right. Then the other ones are just in the level of being recommended. So you have Zuhr prayer. Zuhr prayer, either 2 or 4 units before the Zohar prayer. So Zohar prayer is 4 units. So you could pray either 2 or 4 before, or 2 or 4 after. Okay, so there's flexibility in what you're going to be praying. So if you wanna, if you're feeling really good and you want to pray extra and you feel really good, to, you pray 4 before and you pray 4 after and you pray 4 for Zohar prayer. So you just pray 12 units of prayer. Right? Then there's 2 units of prayer after the Maghrib prayer. Right, so 2 units after Maghrib prayer. We said Asr, there is a recommended prayer, but it's just slightly recommended. So it's not at the same level, so we didn't put it in the list. Maghrib is 2 units of prayer after Maghrib. And Aisha is 2 units of prayer after. It's recommended. So what do you do then? Do you pray Witr first, or do you pray this 2 units of prayer first? You pray the 2 units of prayer first, then you pray Witr. So if you're gonna do this, you do this first, then the Witr prayer. So let's say you were praying Isha, it's gonna be 4 units. Then it's recommended that you pray 2 after that. Then it's highly, highly recommended that you pray your Witr, which is 3 after that. Okay, so that's the Isha prayer. The prayer is connected to the Isha prayer. Now, these prayers, not only do they merit reward, they bring you closer to Allah, but like I said, they help you compensate for the mistakes and the inattention that you had during the prayer, the 5 prayers that you were praying in the first place. So it kind of helps you and, you know, gets you either warmed up or compensates from some things. Now, these prayers are considered optional. Right? They're not considered mandatory, such that you have to do them. If you miss them, you don't have to make them up like you have to do with the other prayers. And if you overlook them or you skip them someday or whatever, it's not considered to be sinful on you. So you don't get a sin. And there's another thing. Because they are optional prayers, you're allowed to perform them while sitting, even if you don't have an excuse. So you can actually pray the prayer sitting down, even if your back is fine, you're standing up or something like that, except the reward of the prayer will be half for you. You get half the reward if you're sitting down. Right, so you can go ahead and perform these prayers sitting. So some people, they feel a little bit tired or something. They're thinking, should I pray? Should I not pray? I'm a little bit tired. Okay, I'll go ahead and sit down and perform this prayer. You get half the reward for the prayer itself, but it's still, you still get something. So you can go ahead and sit down and pray, but you cannot do that with a mandatory prayer. You can only sit down if you actually are ill, your back hurts, or something like that. There's another thing. Is that when you're traveling, these prayers, which are optional prayers, you can actually perform them while sitting in a car or riding on an animal, on a horseback or something like that. Obviously, not while you're driving, because that would be dangerous. Right? But when you're sitting in the passenger side of a car, I just want to point that out. Right? So if you're sitting in the passenger seat of a car, or you're sitting in the back seat of a car or something, even though you're not going to be able to face the direction of prayer, you're allowed to perform these prayers while you're traveling. So if you're sitting in a car, in the back seat of a car or something like that, especially if you're on a long journey and you say, you know what, instead of listening to whatever's on the radio or something, I can pray. So you can go ahead and you can pray while you're in the car. But this is only, remember, the optional prayers, not the mandatory prayers. All right, so those are the recommended optional prayers. Now, there are certain times of the day when you're not supposed to pray. Now, that means you're not supposed to pray the optional prayers, because the 5 prayers, we already know the times, right? Optional prayers, you can pray to Allah anytime you want. You can pray any type of prayer anytime you want, because Allah is always willing to listen, and He's always deserving of praise. But there are certain times where it's disliked to pray during the following times. You should avoid praying during these times. The first one is after Fajr prayer and after Asr prayer. That means after you pray your Fajr prayer and after you pray your Asr prayer, you should avoid praying until the end of the time has finished. So the end of the time for Fajr prayer is what? Sunrise. So if you pray Fajr in the masjid at 5 o'clock and sunrise is at 5:45, when can you resume praying prayers again? After 5:45, so far, until what we've learned so far, right? And the Asr prayer, likewise, same thing. If sunset, so if you've prayed Asr prayer at 5 p.m. and sunset is at 6 p.m., between 5 and 6 p.m., you're not going to be praying any other prayer, optional prayers or something like that. So that's number one. Unless there's a reason for that prayer. I'll give you an example of a reason. So for example, you need to make up a missed prayer. So you pray to your Asr, but then you realize you skipped your Zuhr prayer and you need to make it up. You don't wait until Maghrib time. You go ahead and you make it up at that time, even if it's after this time. You make it up anyways, because that's a time that needs to be made up immediately. It's not just I feel like praying right now. This is a prayer which is due on you. You have to make it up, so you're allowed to pray the make-up prayer during this time. The second one would be a funeral prayer. So funeral prayer, someone, you know, died, someone is coming for burial, and you already prayed your Asr prayer, and now they're being buried into the ground. So what do you do in that case? You're allowed to pray the janazah, the funeral prayer for that person, right? Because there's no other time, they're going to bury the person. So you're allowed to do that. So it's if there's a prayer that's for a specific reason, there's a time for it, you can go ahead and you can pray. Likewise, you can read Quran, you can remember Allah, you can make zikr, you can do all those other things during these times. So that's the time where it's disliked. The second time where it's disliked is during sunrise, exactly during sunrise and during sunset. So the exact time of sunrise while the sun is rising and sunset while the sun is setting. And each of these times last about 15 minutes. Right? So you take sunrise, for example. Right? So the sun rises and about 15... So remember what was the definition of sunrise? Sunrise is when the tip of the sun crosses the horizon. What's going to happen is this is the sun and this is the horizon. And the sun is coming up slowly, slowly, and there, sunrise started. And now it's going to slowly come up. Once it gets all the way up, you're supposed to wait a little bit more until it gets a little bit above the horizon. And that, once it gets here, it takes from this time to this time, it takes 15 minutes. So what you do is when you look at your sunrise time on your calendar, it says, oh, sunrise is at this time. You're supposed to wait 15 minutes before you resume any other prayers. So you should not be praying during that period of time. Okay? And the second is the same thing with sunset. When the sun is actually setting down, like the sunset is right when the sun is completely gone down. That's when Maghrib starts. So 15 minutes prior to that, you should not be praying. And the sun will be like a little bit overhead from the horizon over here. So 15 minutes before that, you should not be praying on both sides. And the reason for this is that there people who used to worship the sun, they would pray during these times, right? And this is to make sure that we don't even resemble them in any way, shape, or form. And you may think, well, there aren't people who worship the sun anymore. You know, they're not around me or something like that. But they were so common. There are still people who do that, by the way. And they were so common and so prevalent. Every time you unearth a civilization, Incan civilization, Mayan civilization, Egyptian civilization, Persians and all of that, you find sun worship built into almost all of these systems. You look at even the names of our calendar, right? Sunday and like all these things, you find these pagan names built into everything. You look at the names of the planets, and they're planets that, you know, Jupiter and Venus and Pluto, and they're all named after deities. They're named after their gods that they used to worship. So we have paganism around us everywhere. Right? Even if people aren't doing it, there's still remnants of it, and there's still like appreciation for it. So we should try to avoid imitating them in any way whatsoever. So the Prophet ﷺ wanted to keep us as far away from these people as we possibly can be. So we don't even give anyone the wrong impression that, you know what, you might be worshipping something. Right? And it's interesting because somebody asked me, somebody says, oh, well, you guys worship the moon. Right? So they said, why do you worship the moon? Said, well, because look at your dome. On top of your mosque, on the dome, there's a little moon sign. And everywhere you go on Muslims, there's a little moon sign. So you guys worship the moon. It's a ridiculous statement, of course. No Muslim worships the moon. But some people, the moon, just they didn't understand what the sign was. It gave some people the wrong perception, and they actually go and spread that rumor around. So the Prophet ﷺ wanted to make it very clear, don't even do any small thing which might give some people a little hint or semblance that you're even doing something in this respect. Otherwise, if we were praying during sunrise, someone would come and say, see, they're praying because the sun is rising. That's what people in the past used to do. They used to pray when the sun is rising and the sun is setting. We don't even want to give that. So he made this clear prohibition, you don't do that. So we stick to that. Even today, when there's no really, there's not really much sun worship going on. So that's the times, the two times that you're not supposed to be performing any prayer. Okay, otherwise, you can pray at any time. Then there's a sunrise prayer, right? Or actually, it shouldn't be called the sunrise prayer. It should be called the Arabic term. It should be called the forenoon prayer. No, I'm talking about English term. Yeah, it should be called like a forenoon prayer or a post-sunrise or what you can call early morning prayer or something like that. So this prayer is supposed to be performed. This is a recommended prayer. Supposed to be performed between the Fajr prayer and the Zohar prayer. So you probably noticed that the time for Zohar goes from Zohar to Asr. Time for Asr goes from Asr to Maghrib. Maghrib starts immediately until the time for Isha. Isha goes all the way until the time for Fajr. But between Fajr and between Zohar, there is nothing. There's no prayer there. So actually, usually, that's the time where people are going to be working. People are going to be earning a living. People are going to be doing their daily things and all of that. So what you find is that there is no prayer that's obligated there. But there is a recommended prayer. And that recommended prayer is to perform either 2 units or 4 units of prayer during that time, anywhere in that time. So it doesn't have to be, you know, at one specific place. It could be any time between there, except as long as it's before Zohar time, it's after Fajr time, after the end of Fajr time. But there's one more exception, which you should be able to figure out. And that is, the end of Fajr time is sunrise, right? But you're not allowed to pray within that first 15 minutes. So as long as you cross the first 15 minutes of sunrise, any time up until Zohar time, which is the high noon, you can go ahead and you can perform this prayer, what's known as the Ishruq prayer, or Ishraq prayer, or Duha prayer. This is considered the early morning prayer. All right, so you can pray 2 or you can pray 4 units, just like any other prayer, like Fajr prayer, like Zohar prayer, and it's a silent prayer, right? So because it's during the daytime. So you can perform that. That's a recommended prayer as well. Then there are night prayers. And night prayers are very recommended as well. You can join us, brother. Bismillah. So the night prayers are also recommended. Now, praying at night is actually better than the extra prayers during the day, because that's when most people, and I say most normal people, I'm excluding college students and, you know, those other people, they actually sleep during nighttime. Most people sleep during the nighttime. So that's why, because while people are sleeping, it's difficult to wake up from your sleep, interrupt your sleeping pattern. So it shows more devotion and obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So these are considered very rewarded prayers because they're difficult. It's difficult to wake up in the middle of the night, disturb your sleep, and start praying at that time when everyone else is comfortable and sleeping. So this is something that's it's very very rewarding, but it's not considered highly recommended at the same level as witr prayer, or at the same level as the 2 units of prayer before Fajr. All right, so the night prayers can be performed any time after Isha, but the best time to pray them is in the last third of the night. So the best time to pray these prayers is the same time that the best time for witr prayer is, at the last one third of the night, and after you've slept. So otherwise, there's not much reward of you waking up from sleep to pray the prayers if you didn't sleep in the first place. So like all those college students, they're like, oh, I pray every night before I go to sleep. What time do you sleep? Sleep at 3:30 in the morning. So you didn't sleep actually in the first place. You just stayed up watching TV or something, and then you decided you're gonna go ahead and pray. So you're still rewarding, of course, but it's not the same level. So it's recommended if you wake up to pray between 2 to 8 units of prayer consisting of 2 unit prayers each. So you either pray 1 2-unit prayer, or you could pray 2, which makes 4. You could pray 3 sets, or you could pray 4 sets. All right. So you can pray either one of them as much as you want. And if you've not performed the witr prayer already, it's recommended you conclude your final prayers with witr at the end. So let's say you wake up at night and say, I'm just going to pray two. What you do is you pray two units of this night prayers, what's known as tahajjud. And after you're done with that, you say, okay, I'm getting a little bit tired now, I'm about done. You pray your witr prayer. And then you go to sleep, or you wait until the fajr time, right, and you continue. Or you could pray eight. So let's say you pray eight. You pray two, 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 and then you pray your witr prayer. So you pray three. So when you woke up at night, how many units did you pray? 11. You prayed 11 units then. So you could do either of those. And this is something which you build up over time. It's recommended to, at least it could be like, you know, your dream in life, you know, your goal in life. Everyone has their goals. I'm going to buy this one day. I'm going to buy that car one day. I'm going to live in this house one day. Your goal as a Muslim should be, you know what, one day I'm going to be waking up that one third of the night and I'm going to be praying those eight units. That's my goal someday. In 5 years, I can do it. In 10 years, whenever it is, I'm ready, I'm going to be able to do that and I'm going to keep it up. That should be like the Muslim's dream goal that they should be looking forward to. And I'm going to concentrate in all my prayers in the daytime. That's a real goal to look forward to, rather than such and such chrome rims on my car or something like that. You know, so think about that. There's another prayer that's recommended, and that's prayer when entering a mosque. So whenever you enter a mosque, it's recommended to pray at least 2 units before sitting down. So whenever you walk in, you pray 2 units of prayer in the mosque area before you sit down. Just, is it a correction or something? Oh, just write it down and ask it at the end, inshallah. So 2 units before you sit down. Now, if a person already sat down, right, they can still get up and perform this prayer. So it's not like if you just sat down for a moment, you cannot pray this anymore. You can still get up and perform this prayer. So if you walk in, you sit down, and then you remember, hey, I should pray. I'm not doing anything else. You can stand up and you can still perform this prayer. This is called the Tahiyyatul Masjid prayer. Okay, so this is something you can do. Now, if the person begins another prayer, such as like the prayer for that time, then that prayer that they're performing will count as the prayer for welcoming the mosque or entering the mosque. So let me give you an example. So if you come in the morning for Fajr prayer, and as soon as you walk in, you're supposed to pray you're praying your two recommended units of prayer. Okay? Your two recommended units of prayer count as your entering the mosque prayer, right? If you come late for Fajr and you join the congregation that already started, the 2 units of prayer that you're praying counts as your entering the mosque prayer. Why? Because this is not considered a separate prayer by itself. The point of this prayer is that anytime you walk inside of a mosque, anytime you walk inside of a masjid, you're not supposed to just do anything, because the masjid is mainly a place of prayer. So when you walk into a masjid, there's a lot of things you can do. Some people will walk in and say, well, I have a meeting in the masjid. So I'm going to meet someone and sit down for 30 minutes and have a conversation with them. Instead of doing that before you walk in, what you're doing is you're almost redefining the masjid as being a place of conversation. So in order to maintain the fact that it's still a masjid, a place of prayer, you walk in, you perform these 2 units of welcoming the masjid or entering the mosque, and then you sit down and you do whatever else you want to do. Sit down for an hour, sit down for half hour, whatever it is. You go ahead and you do that prayer. So that's what the way that this prayer works. All right, so the wisdom behind it is to honor the mosque by praying in it before you walk in. That's the point or the wisdom behind this. All right. And according to some scholars, only one of these prayers with that intention is recommended per day in a mosque. All right, so some scholars say one per prayer time, and some scholars said one per day. So you only need to do it one time per day in a particular mosque. So for example, you're sitting in the mosque, you're having a conversation with someone. You have a meeting with someone, you're discussing some things with them, and then you decide, you know what, I need to go to the bathroom. So you go to the bathroom, and you come back to continue your conversation. Should you be praying another prayer of entering the mosque prayer again? No, you don't need to do it again. Right? Now let's say you decide, okay, we're having a meeting, we're going to go out and eat lunch for a few hours, and then we're going to come back and we're going to meet with someone else. Right? Do you need to perform your prayers? Well, some scholars said if the prayer time is different, then you should do it again. Other scholars said, no, it's only once per day because you're honoring the mosque. Once a day is sufficient for you. So there's a little difference of opinion on that. But just keep that in mind. It's a recommended thing. If you do it, at least try to do it once a day. But if you walk in and you already perform a prayer, which is part of the group prayer or whatever it is of the day, it counts as substituting for your tahiyatul masjid or your this prayer, this entering the mosque prayer. Okay. Moving on, the funeral prayer. Okay, funeral prayer is an important thing. It's you know, death is a fact of life. Nobody denies that sometime everyone is gonna pass away. The funeral prayer has been implemented in Islam in order to honor a dead Muslim, in order to pray for them once they've passed from this life, from this world. So who needs to pray, first of all? Who must perform this prayer? The funeral prayer is a collective obligation on the entire Muslim community. So meaning, what is a collective obligation? A collective obligation means that as long as there are some Muslims in the community performing this prayer, you know, they're preparing the dead body and they're praying over, you know, over the person and all of that, praying for the person, then the responsibility will be fulfilled. Right? But if no one does it, if everybody neglects it, every single Muslim who's living in that community is going to be responsible for neglecting their duty. And this is a very, very important thing. Because if some Muslim dies in this area, and every Muslim goes and says, you know what, well, I don't have time to help bury them, and I don't have time, and I don't have time, say, well, we're performing the prayer now. We need to do the prayer of this person. Well, I'm busy, and he's busy, and she's busy. Everyone is busy, and no one performs the prayer for that person. Then what's going to happen is every single one of the Muslims in that area is held responsible and is going to be sinful in front of God. That's a very serious thing. Now, alhamdulillah, in America, for example, this rarely happens. But it happened recently. Unfortunately, it happened recently. And it's something that we need to realize that our collective obligation takes priority over our own busyness as well as over our PR, public relations campaigns, and all of that. So what happens, does anyone know who I'm talking about? I'm talking about the bombing which took place in Boston. You guys are familiar with the, you heard about the bombing, right? So supposedly it was these Muslim kids who did the bombing. Now this is obviously, if they did it, and the way that they say that it was done, it's an act of terrorism. It has nothing to do with Islam. It's completely wrong. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, the person who died and commits a sin, a person who is drinking and dies, a person who's doing something wrong and dies, they're still a Muslim, right? So we hope that, you know, maybe Allah will forgive them. It's Allah's job to deliver the justice when it comes to that. But what happened was this person's body was left and none of the Muslims wanted to touch it. They said, we're not going to touch it. We're not going to bury him. We're not going to perform the funeral prayer over him. Why? Because the people of Boston and the people of America were so heartbroken and so upset, so angry about Islam that they said, you know what? It's going to look really, really bad in the eyes of the media and in the eyes of so-and-so that we're praying over this person as if we've accepted their action. Doesn't mean you accept their action. But they're still a Muslim at the end of the day. It's our responsibility to pray over them. So we need to be very careful about when it comes to PR, things like that. A collective obligation takes precedence and priority over any PR agenda that might be out there. So just a note to keep in mind. All the masjids, as far as I heard, if this report is true, they refuse to pray over the person. Why? Because the media and Fox News and everything was literally breathing down their neck and they would target them. If you get targeted, you get targeted. You know, I mean, that, what can you do? But this is a person's responsibility. Go in a corner and do it somewhere outside the city or something like that. You don't have to do it inside your mosque. You could be anywhere. Do it at the graveyard or whatever it may be. Yeah. Yeah, the body. Yeah, I'm gonna talk about that, inshallah. So the body is supposed to be there. All right. So this is a communal obligation. Just keep that in mind. So if wherever you are, something happens, someone's got to take off time from work. Someone's got to take a vacation one day from work and go and pray over that person and make sure that their body's buried. Otherwise, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it otherwise? So what are the conditions? The conditions for performing this prayer, first of all, the deceased must be a Muslim. Second of all, the dead body must be present and it must be prepared for burial. So the dead body has to be present there and it should be there. It has to be there. In case someone has been buried already and nobody performed the funeral prayer over the body, you can pray in front of the grave where the burial was, if the burial was recent. It would recently happen. But if it's been like, you know, a few weeks, it's been a few months, it's been a few years or something, then you just leave it, you just skip it, and Allah knows, you know, Allah knows the intention. And it's not going to, you know, it's not going to adjust what happens to them, inshallah. So how do you perform this prayer? So this prayer consists of only standing. You stand the entire time. There is no bowing. There is no prostration. There is no sitting. You stand literally the entire time like this, okay? So the way that it's done is you place the deceased person in front of the imam. Okay, so you have the person in a coffin or in the, you know, like wrapped up and ready to be buried. You place them on the ground or, you know, on a table or whatever it is. And the imam, the leader of the prayer, is going to stand right in front of them but facing the direction of the prayer. Okay, not, you know, not obviously not away from the direction of the prayer. It's going to be facing right there. And the followers will line up behind the imam as normal, right? And what's going to happen is the prayer begins with the imam saying, Allahu Akbar, raising up his hands, and then folding the hands like this. So you start the prayer like normal, right? So there's two ways to perform the prayer, and we're going to talk about one way only. So it's easy way for you. You start by saying, Allahu Akbar, and you start the prayer. Then you recite Al-Fatiha. So you recite Surah Al-Fatiha just like the normal way that you would start prayer. Then what you do, the imam says another takbir. He says, Allahu Akbar again, and he raises his hands a second time. And he folds them again. And then and this is all silent, by the way, because in the daytime it's all silent. Everyone will silently recite the salawat, the blessings on the Prophet. So you say, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad. Where do we recite this in prayer normally? During the sitting position. So at the end, near the end of the prayer, we say this right before we conclude the prayer in the sitting position. We take that same thing which we say every single day, and we say the same thing after we make this second Allahu Akbar takbir. So we recite, say Allahu Akbar, recite Fatiha, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Say Allahu Akbar, say Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad. You finish the whole thing. Then the imam says another takbir. He says Allahu Akbar again, raises his hands again, folds them. And everyone is supposed to silently supplicate for the deceased person. So you make a dua supplication for the person. And you can use any words that you want, as long as it's in Arabic because it's a prayer. So the most basic thing you say Allahumma ighfir lahu. That's all you can memorize, you just memorize that. If it's a man, Allahumma ighfir lahu. If it's a woman, Allahumma ighfir laha. The who becomes a ha in Arabic, right? So you can say that. There are a lot of different supplications that the Prophet, peace be upon him, taught the Muslims. So you can memorize either one of those. Here's a very short one. I have it in the book. It's Allahumma ighfir li hayyina wa mayyitina wa shahidina wa ghaibina wa saghirina wa kabirina wa dhakarina wa unthana. Which means, O Allah, forgive our living and our dead, our present and our absent, our young and our old, our male and our female. So that's one example of a supplication the Prophet used to say. So you're praying for the person and you're praying for everyone else as well. So this, any number of supplications you can make, you're allowed to go ahead and do that. Once you're done with that, you say one more time, Allahu Akbar, another takbir, and then you conclude the prayer like normal while standing. Say, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. You finished. So that's the way it's going to look. So the funeral prayer is going to be, the dead body is brought inside the masjid. It's going to be placed right there. Imam is going to start. Going to say, Allahu Akbar. Recite Fatiha. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Say, Allahu Akbar. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad. Till the end. Say, Allahu Akbar. Allahumma ghafir lahu. Right, and you continue. Whatever you want to recite. You say Allahu Akbar. You say Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. That's the funeral prayer. It's very short. You don't sit. You don't bow. You don't do anything. So when it comes to the funeral prayer, one of the things you should know if you're gonna be the imam is if there's crowding going on, tell people to stop leaving the gap in between, because you're not gonna prostrate anyways. So people can literally be standing like 1 foot away from each other, and there's more than enough space for them, because they're not gonna bow, they're not gonna prostrate. They don't need all that space between them, so they can fill in all the gaps literally, and they can be next to each other and they can pray. All right? So that is the funeral prayer. Okay. There's another thing related to prayer which needs to be covered, and that is the prostration of recitation. Okay, this is known as sajda at-tilawa. So the prostration of recitation is recommended, and this is according to the Shafi'i school, by the way. According to the Hanafi school, it's required. It's recommended to prostrate after reciting or hearing certain verses of the Quran which emphasize this humility in front of Allah. So there are certain verses of the Quran which the Prophet used to go into prostration whenever he would recite the verse, or even when he would hear the verse. Right? So there are 14 places in the Quran where there is a place of prostration, and they are as follows. So the list is in your book. So these are the numbers. So chapter 7, verse 206. 84, verse 21. Chapter 96, verse 19. So these are the verses that are there. And when you're reading the Quran in Arabic, if you learn, if you take our Quranic recitation class, we'll teach you that it's actually written in the corner. It says the word sajda, which means prostration, whenever it's in the corner here, whenever that verse comes up. So there's only 14 places in the Quran that have this. So you pretty much, you kind of, whatever you read in prayer, you have memorized already anyways. So whenever you memorize one of these surahs or one of these verses, you know that it's a verse of prostration. So it's not just going to be random or something. But what you don't know is, if the imam who's leading the prayer, if he knows the verse but you don't, then he's going to say Allahu Akbar and go straight into prostration, in the middle of prayer even, and you're supposed to follow him. Right, so it's important so that you be aware. If you wonder, if you didn't know this at all, and all of a sudden the imam is reciting Quran and you don't know which part of the Quran he's reciting, and then he says Allahu Akbar and he goes all the way into prostration, you might think, if you didn't study up until now, you might think he made a mistake. So what would you start doing if you made a mistake? Start saying Subhanallah, Subhanallah. He didn't make a mistake, because he's actually going into sajda, because he knows that these are one of the verses where the Prophet used to prostrate as well. Okay, so these are 14 places where there's prostration. Imam Shafi said there's one more, so there's 15 according to Imam Shafi. But 14 are agreed upon. So if you recite one of these verses during your prayer, so you're in the middle of prayer, and you intend on continuing your recitation, so you're reciting the Quran and you're going to keep on reciting. You're not just going to recite chapter 7, verse 206. You're going to recite 207, 208, all the way up until 209. You had the intention of going until 209 because you wanted to finish that meaning or that section of the Quran in your recitation. What you do is, while you're reciting, you're in the middle of reciting, you're just going to say Allahu Akbar, and you're going to go all the way down into prostration. And all the followers, everyone else also goes with you. And you're going to do prostration like normal. Subhana Rabbi al-A'la, three times. Then you're going to say Allahu Akbar, and you're going to stand back up all the way, same standing position, and you continue reciting verse 207. And then you keep on reciting verse 208, verse 201, whatever verses, until you feel like you're done. And then you continue the prayer like normal. So you're in the middle of prayer, as soon as you read one of these verses, you stop right there and you go straight into prostration. Okay? The followers should also follow. Okay. If you're a follower and the imam, let's say, during Zuhr prayer, which is silent, right? So Zuhr prayer is silent. The imam is reciting certain verses of the Quran and you're reciting your own verses of the Quran. So what if you recite a verse of prostration silently and the imam is not doing that? What do you do in that case? Do you have to prostrate? No. Because in this case, following the imam takes priority. So it overrides the fact that you have to do the prostration. So you don't have to do that. Okay? But if the imam does it silently, he should go into prostration and come back up. But it's not recommended for an imam in a silent prayer to read verses of prostration, because it'll confuse some people, because they don't understand what's going on, right? I mean, they may understand what happened, but they don't even know which verse he read, and they're just going and prostrating anyways. So since they're not hearing it, it's better that he doesn't do that. Okay. If you decide to stop at the prostration verse, and you're not going to continue reciting more of the Quran, because it's like, let's say it's the last verse of the surah. So for example, look at the last one, chapter 96, verse 19. How many verses are there in chapter 96, Surah Al-Alaq? There's only 19 verses in the entire surah. So chapter verse 19 happens to be the verse which tells you you're supposed to be prostrating. So at the end, if you're going to stop, if you're going to continue reciting, you have to start with chapter number 97. If you have the intention of you're going to keep on moving to 97 verse 1, 97 verse 2, then you're going to perform the prostration. Otherwise, if you're going to stop right there, you don't have to perform the prostration. The reason why you don't have to is because you're going to be going, you're going to say Allahu Akbar, and you're going to be going into bowing, and then you're going to be going into prostration anyway. So there's no significant gap in between, so you're allowed to skip that. You don't have to keep reciting. Otherwise, you would recite, you'd make the prostration, stand back up, and then just continue the prayer like normal. All right, so yeah, this is because you're going to prostrate anyways. If you're not in prayer, so let's just say you're sitting by yourself and you're reading some Quran, and you recite one of these verses, what should you do? Well, you should stand up, you should say the takbir, say Allahu Akbar. You don't have to raise your hands or anything. Stand up, say Allahu Akbar, and go into prostration. You perform the prostration the same way you would normally do. You say Allahu Akbar, and you sit back up. You're done. That's it. No salam. Nothing else, just like normal. That's it. That's all that requires your prostration. That's all that you have to have. Okay. According to the Hanafi school, you have to be in a state of purity while performing this prostration, meaning you have to have wudu while performing this prostration. And usually you would, because if you're reading Quran, unless you're memorizing, you know, reviewing, you would generally have it anyways. According to Imam Shafi'i, though, it's not a requirement. But you make sure that you're properly covered when you perform this, and make sure that you're facing the direction of prayer, the Qibla, when you're performing the prostration. Okay? And if you're outside the prayer, let's see what happened here. So if outside the prayer you're reciting the Quran, or you hear someone else reciting one of these verses, you should prostrate, but it doesn't have to be done immediately, right? So you can either do it immediately, or you can delay if you want for a little while. So let's say, for example, you're sitting in the masjid, you're listening to someone reading Quran, or you're reading Quran yourself. You don't have to perform it immediately. You can, let's say, you had the intention of sitting down, you wanted to read two pages of Quran. You opened up the Quran, and you happen to be at verse, chapter 7, verse 200. Surah Al-A'raf, and you're reciting from verse 200, and you say, you know, I'm going to read about 20 verses of the Quran. So you're reading, and you say, you know what, I got to 206, but you know what, I want to, you know, let me just finish what I'm reading. You can go ahead and finish until verse 220. And then you can do the prostration afterwards. You would normally want to do this, why? Because if you're memorizing, right? So when you memorize, let's say you're memorizing chapter 13, verses 14, 15, 16, and 17. So you're going to sit there and you take verse 14, you're going to repeat it again and again and again and again until you memorize it. Then if you read verse 15, you're going to repeat it again and again. While you're repeating, if you're going to prostrate every time, and then you repeat it again, and then you prostrate again, and you repeat it again, too many prostrations there. You're gonna get thrown off. So you don't have to do it immediately. You could do it at your own leisure. Okay, so it can be done immediately or it can be delayed. If you hear a recording, like a CD, of a person reciting, then the question is it still recommended to perform the prostration or not? And my opinion is that it's the same as if you were listening to it live, because the effect that it has on you, the concentration, you're trying to reflect upon it, it's the same. So you should go and perform the prostration as well. But if you're in your car, like you said, once you're done, you've parked and everything, go and perform the prostration. And according to Imam Shafi, it's only recommended. So if you forgot, you got on the freeway, you got stuck in traffic or something, it's fine. All right? Okay, so the these are appendices in the book. So these are general principles where we should really understand these principles so that we don't get confused. These principles apply across the board whenever we're studying Islamic law. So the first principle is that doubt does not remove certainty. Okay, doubt does not remove certainty. So what does that mean exactly? Well, a lot of people have questions about things in Islamic law about doubts. Well, what if I'm not sure if I prayed 2 units or 3 units? What if I think I lost my wudu? What if I think my fasting was broken? What if I think sunrise had come when I prayed but I wasn't sure? These are all what we call doubts. So whenever these questions come out, like what if I feel something came out, or what if the water might have some impurities in it, right? So this water may not be clean, or it could be that I prayed an extra unit, or it could be that there's some impurity on my foot, on my shoe, but I just can't see it, but I might have stepped in something. I might have stepped in. So look at all these words, right? I might have done this, it could have been, what if such and such happened? These concerns that people have, they're all coming out of well-meaning zeal and, you know, wanting to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is, it's very good, it's based on a sincere intention. It's based on a right intention, but these can all be easily resolved by understanding this principle that doubt does not remove certainty. And Allah wanted us, He taught us, the Prophet, peace be upon him, taught us this principle. And therefore, we're supposed to apply this principle rather than applying our own understanding of what Allah would want us to have. So if you say, no, I want to be very on the safe side, what if there's some impurity in that water? What if there's something on my shoe? Maybe something happens this way, that way, or something, and you think that you're being more pious by doing that. But remember, in Islam, Islam is means submission. The definition of submission means you submit to Allah and His Messenger and their teachings. So if the Prophet taught us this principle, that doubt does not remove certainty, right? Don't let doubts overcome what you have general certainty about, then our devotion to Allah should be in following this principle. Rather than in thinking that when we follow each and every little tiny thing, what if maybe this, maybe that, you're not actually following Islam by doing that. You may think that you're trying to do something good with a good intention, but with the wrong knowledge. So it's very important to have right knowledge and a good intention, not just a good intention. So here's an example. So basically what this means is, when you're relatively sure about something, any other doubts that come up in your mind, you should discard them and not consider them at all. You just literally throw them away. The Prophet, peace upon him, he made a statement. He said, "Da' ma yaribuk ila ma la yaribuk." Leave that which gives you some doubt for that which does not give you any doubt. So let's take an example. Okay, if you have a doubt whether or not you have wudu, maybe I have wudu, maybe I don't have wudu. Well, you go with what you're sure about. So we talked about this already before. If you recall waking up from sleep, you remember brushing your teeth. So you remember you woke up. You remember that you brushed your teeth, but you don't remember whether or not you made wudu. You say, well, I know I brushed my teeth. I'm thinking in my mind, I see myself brushing my teeth. I feel in my teeth that I had brushed my teeth. All right, I can tell my breath and everything, I brushed it. But I don't remember if I performed wudu or not. I'm looking at my arms, not seeing any water. My looking at my face, not seeing any water. My feet are dry, there's no water on there. So what does that tell me? I can't figure out, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. In this case, your certainty is what? You're certain that you brushed your teeth, and you're certain that you woke up, which also means that you're certain you were sleeping. And if you were sleeping, you lost your wudu. So your certainty here is you don't have wudu, and you're supposed to perform your wudu. This is considered... this is not considered a doubt. Right? So this is a doubt whether that you made wudu or not. But the certainty is that you didn't have wudu because you're certain that you slept. And you doubt whether you had wudu, so you don't have wudu. You throw the doubt away. So the doubt is what? Maybe I have wudu, maybe I don't have wudu. And the certainty is, I'm sure I was sleeping. So these are the two things you identify. And what do? The maybe, perhaps thing, you throw it away. What's left? I was sleeping. I don't have wudu, I need to make wudu. Okay? That's example number one. So that's something you need to do. Otherwise, people, they're going to come and ask a bunch of questions to themselves. So but let's take another example. You remember that you were praying. You know that you prayed your Fajr prayer. But now you start thinking, maybe I passed some gas during my Fajr prayer. My stomach was gurgling a little bit. I started feeling something, right? Now what do I do? Do I repeat the prayer or not? So, your certainty is what? The certainty is that you prayed Fajr. Where is the doubt? The doubt is, did I lose my wudu while I was praying that Fajr? Did something come out or it didn't? So what do you do? What do? You take the doubt and you throw it away. What's left? You prayed Fajr. You're done. Move on with your life. Continue the rest of your day. You don't think twice about it. That's the way it works. Okay? Let's take another example. You wake up in the morning. You remember that you had an erotic dream when you were sleeping. But you wake up, you don't see any trace of semen on your clothes. You don't find anything else. So you say, okay, I don't need to take a bath. But then you're just going to make wudu for the Fajr prayer. But then you start thinking, you're making wudu, and you say, well, wait a minute. What if something came out while I was sleeping during my dream, but then it dried up? So you look around, and you check, and you say, there's no traces of anything. So the certainty is what? The certainty is you had an erotic dream. The doubt is whether or not something came out. So what do? You throw the doubt away. You're left with, you had an erotic dream. Does having a dream necessitate that you have to take a bath when you wake up? No. So you don't need to take a bath. You just make wudu, you continue your life as normal, you do your prayer, and you're going to be fine. Right? So that's the way it's going to work. Now, you can only override that with another certainty. So you wake up in the morning, you remember that you had a dream, and then you start thinking, you know what, maybe it dried up, maybe something happened. And you're looking around, and then you find traces of it, of semen that had dried up. Now you can see the clear signs that, yes, it had dried up. Now what do? Now you have certainty that you had the dream, and you also have general certainty that something came out. Now you got to take a bath. That's the only way that one certainty can override another certainty. But if there's a doubt here and there's a certainty here, this doubt cannot override what you're certain about. You just throw this doubt away and you build upon this. This is what's called building upon certainty. Right? So doubt does not remove the certainty that you have. It stays in place. Okay. So the same rule applies when determining when something occurred. Not only whether something occurred, also when something occurred. So for example, if you completed your prayer, you finished your prayer, 30 minutes later, you notice that there's some impurity on your clothes. All of a sudden, you find that there's some, urine on your clothes or something like that. Well, what do? So you can assume safely that, you know what, there's a possibility that this urine came on my clothes before prayer. It might have come before I prayed. It might have come after I prayed. I don't know. So let's say you work in a butcher shop. So you were at work, you're doing the cutting and all of that stuff. You checked your clothes before you were going to pray, and you walk in, and what do? You start praying, and then after about an hour, you go back to work, you're doing your work and everything, and then all of a sudden you look and you see some blood on your pant. You say, "Oh, was that blood there before I prayed, or did it come after I prayed?" So when you're trying to figure out which one it is, what you do is you say, well, it could have been before and it could have been after. You don't know. So what you do is you safely assume that, you know what, it probably was afterwards. We don't have to worry about that because you checked your clothes beforehand. So you were certain that you checked your clothes pretty good. You don't need to worry about that. But let's take a counterexample. Counterexample is you're painting. You're painting the wall or something like that. So you go and you perform your wudu and everything. Everything's going good. You're checking for paint and all of that. And then you perform your prayer. 30 minutes later, you look on your foot. There was some paint. You totally missed it. You forgot it. And you start thinking, did that paint come before my prayer or after my prayer? But you did not continue painting after your prayer. You were only painting before your prayer, and then your paint job was done. The paint cans were gone. You never encountered paint again after the prayer. In that case, now you have general certainty that that could have only happened before the prayer, because I was painting before the prayer, and there's no way I could have gotten paint on my hand or whatever it was, which prevents the water from going through. Therefore, your certainty now is that it was before prayer. So what do you got to do? You got to repeat the prayer, right? You got to make wudu again. You got to remove the paint, make wudu again, repeat the prayer. So that's the principle number one, okay? So if one of them is more likely, you give it preference. The second principle, which applies across the board, is that difficulty necessitates ease. Okay, difficulty, when you're encountering some real difficulty, you're allowed to have an exception to the rule. And that's why Islam is considered to be a very moderate religion. It makes it easy for you. So anytime you're encountering something difficult, there's always going to be an exception for you. So this axiom that we're going to apply, it means that every time you're in a difficult circumstance, there's going to be some exception. But this may apply on an individual level, for whether a person has difficulty, like let's take an example, individual level. On an individual level, if you have difficulty standing for prayer, what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to sit. If you have difficulty sitting, you're allowed to lie down, right? If you can't even move around, you're allowed to pray just with the basic motions or something, or the rest in your heart. So you don't have to even move or something like that. Now, this can also be an exception on a societal level. So if you're in a society where everyone is going to be, their life is going to become difficult because of a certain thing, then there's an exception to the rule for the entire society. So let me give you an example. So we talked about feces, right, of animals and human beings, and all is considered impure, right? So you're supposed to be praying on a clean place only. There's not supposed to be any urine, any feces, anything like that. Now let's say you're in a large mosque outside, and because it's overfilled. Or let's say you're in Mecca. You're in Medina, and you're praying outside the courtyard. There's no shelter on top. And you're praying, and you're in the middle of prayer and everything, and it just so happens that that bird happened to go to the bathroom directly above you, and it came straight on your head. Now you have impurity on your head, or it came straight in the place where... So what do you do in that case? So in that case, because... this is something which people will encounter in certain places where you're not going to stop the birds from going overhead, right? They're going to go. So what do you do? In this case, bird droppings are considered to be an exception to the rule from impurities during your prayer. Outside of prayer, if you get the chance to wash it off, fine. During your prayer and stuff, it's considered to be overlooked. So some places you have bird droppings here and there, you can still pray in that area. Why? Because it would be too difficult to avoid. It would be too difficult to avoid, so there's an exception to the rule. I'll give you another example, and that is the use of banks. Today, a modern example is the use of banks. So many people don't think about it, but when you put your money in a bank, they're not doing you a favor by keeping it for you, right? As like a gesture and a kindness and a courtesy, and they don't charge you any monthly payment. It's like they're not there to do you a favor. So what they're doing is they're taking your money that you deposit in the bank and they're loaning it out to somebody else on interest in order to accumulate more money. And we know that as Muslims, we don't give interest and we don't take interest. So by putting your money into the bank, what you're ending up doing is you're basically giving it to someone to use it and to use it in order to make interest off of it, which is technically impermissible in Islam. But because what are you going to do with all the cash that you have? Are you going to keep it under your pillow? Are you going to keep it under your bed? Are you going to, do whatever else with it? So the thing is, until there is a non-profit type of bank institution where you can actually safely transfer money across the board back and forth, until there's some institution like that, it's permissible for you to go ahead and keep your money inside of a bank as long as you're not engaging in the rest of the process. Although you can't avoid certain parts of it. So otherwise, it would have been impermissible for you to even keep your money in the bank in the first place, because you know they're going to take your money and loan it out to someone else. All right, so that's an example of when things become an exception to the rule. But here's the caveat. The caveat is that we covered a lot of exceptions to the rule we've seen already. But whenever a person or a society is faced with some difficulty when they're trying to follow Islam, there is an exception, there may be an exception, but you don't know what the exception is going to look like. So you shouldn't just say, oh, well, there must be an exception for me, so I'm going to go ahead and make the exception for myself. You should always consult a scholar or someone who's specialized in the field of law, first of all, whether or not there is an exception for me. Otherwise, everyone finds it difficult to wake up for Fajr, right? It's just so difficult to wake up for Fajr in the morning, in the summertime, 5 o'clock in the morning. It's got to be an exception. I'm going to pray 8 o'clock in the morning. You can't just make an exception for yourself like that. Otherwise, but it's too difficult. Trust me, it's way too difficult. So no, you can't just say it's difficult. It's more difficult than when I'm traveling, so I'm going to shorten my prayers. You can't do that. You can't just make it up the exception yourself. And second of all, you need to know what the exception should look like. So what is the exception supposed to look like exactly? So let's say a person who's injured. Person has some type of injury and they didn't take this class and they don't know, they never studied what to do. So the injury, someone has an injury, say, well, you know what? I know there's got to be an exception to the rule. But what is the exception? If you have an injury, does it mean you can skip prayer? Or does it mean you can delay your prayer and pray it later once you're healed? Or do you perform the prayer in a different way due to your injury? These are all exceptions to the rule. Now that you've learned, when you have an injury, which one of the exceptions is the correct one? You pray in a different way. Can you skip the prayer? You can't skip the prayer. Can you delay it and then once you're healed, you go back and you pray it again? No, right? So there's a certain way to make the exception as well. So that's very important to keep in mind. Okay, so that's why you don't just, what you should do is as soon as you know you're in really difficult circumstances, you know that Islam is going to have an exception for you. But you have to determine, am I legitimately in really exceptional circumstances, or am I just being a little bit, of a wimp or something like that? I'm just not being tough enough on myself. You need to figure that out by going and asking a specialist. And then if you are in very difficult circumstances, then they're going to tell you what the exception to the rule is, right? So if you, let's say you need to earn a living, you can't even find a job, and the only job that you can find, and literally you have to support a family, the only job you can find is dealing in something which is considered impermissible in Islam. There is an exception for you. But before you assume and think that, yeah, I know I have to earn a living, in your mind you may be thinking, I have to earn $20 an hour. I'm not going to settle for a $15 an hour job. But when the person goes and assesses your situation, there was a halal job for $15 an hour, but you felt that you had to have the $20 an hour one in order to survive. So you wanted to go in that one. The person might explain to you, say, what, you're not qualified for an exception because you could get the $15 an hour job and you still support your family. So you have to first check with someone to figure out whether you qualify, and number two, what the exception to the rule will be. Right? So if you get a job, for example, having to serve alcohol in a restaurant because you can't find any other job, that can be an exception to the rule, as long as you need to support your family until you find another job. But if you go and say, well, I really, really need this job, So, well, what is the job? I'm a hitman. I'm assassinating people. Okay, no, you can't take that job. So you say, well, but there's an exception to the rule. My family needs to make money, and this guy's going to pay me $500 to take this other guy out. There are exceptions, and then there are exceptions. So you have to figure out which exception is going to apply, which exception is not going to apply. So it's very important before you take it into your own hands, go and consult an expert. Okay? So we'll stop here. Next week, we're actually 1 week ahead. So next week, I think if I can prepare the notes, we're going to cover the pilgrimage, inshallah. We'll cover Umrah and Hajj. The following week, we cover Zakah. And there's going to be a lot more people because we're opening up the class to everyone. The following week after that, we're going to cover Ramadan, inshallah. All right. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nastaghfiruka Allah wa natubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum.